die too soon. I might not be alive to see 25. Throw that 10 to make money and strive. I sold tapes to school and made some ends. Met a lot of skins and even...
Hi, everybody. Back with Eric Mann and Tammy Lou on Voices from the Frontlines. We're now on with Bob Masters, the New York, New England Legislative and Political Director for the Communications Workers of America, District 1. Bob, are you on the line with us?
I am.
And you heard Martin Ludlow, the County Fed Chair of Los Angeles, were you?
I heard the last piece of it.
Okay. We'll just start with what do you think of the split as it is? And Martin's point of view is certainly at least trying to say that it's not going to have that much of an impact. Obviously, we have concerns that it will. What do you think? Let's start with going back to the issue of, first of all, can you explain what this split is about? We want to keep saying this. We're pretty smart, and for something as big as breaking up the union movement in the United States, I'd like to understand better what the issues are. So why don't you give our sense of, as we say, the text and the subtext. What's going on here?
Well, I think it's difficult for a lot of us to understand exactly why it has come to this. The CWA has been opposed to a split from the very beginning of the discussion. There are obviously some unions who feel so strongly that the work of the AFL-CIO is so inadequate that the only solution is to blow up the whole federation. But when you look closely at what they're saying, I think it is kind of mystifying because, really, the differences, especially as they got narrowed down, as the Sweeney leadership attempted to compromise with the Change to Win folks about how to, you know, try to keep things together, the differences were quite narrow. I mean, their argument was that we needed to spend more money through the Federation on organizing. We're talking here about a difference of opinion over 1% or less of the total dues collected by the American labor movement because Change to Win was talking about rebating $50 million to affiliates for organizing. At the end, the Sweeney leadership was talking about rebating $22.5 million. From what we've read and what we've heard, at the very end of the day, the people who were leaving, you know, attempted to blackmail the Sweeney leadership into naming a successor of their choosing. And, you know, that was just kind of an unacceptable ultimatum. So, Eric, I would say that we think that while certainly the labor movement needs to be shaken up, and I wrote a piece that gave an enormous amount of credit to SEIU several months ago for raising a lot of the difficult issues about change that needs to be made. But shaking things up is one thing. Shaking it up and smashing things on the floor is quite another.
Well, I think the thing I'm trying to understand is that, the first thing is that I read, by the way, were you on with Amy Goodman? Is that where you had an excellent, I read a transcript of your comments there.
Right.
And you did give a lot of credit to Andy Stern for good reason.
Right.
Here's what my concern is. First of all, there's a whole lot of issues that are not even on the table, like
right.
the war in Iraq, like 2 million people in prison in the United States, 1.2 million of whom are black and Latino. Those issues to take two, global warming to take three, very serious stuff. That's not on the Change to Win. That's not on the AFL agenda, unfortunately. There are progressives in both sides taking up those issues.
Right.
But I wish if that would be a split, at least we would understand that.
Right.
Secondly, I'm just going to keep putting my opinions out here. The pleasure of being a host here is SEIU's had a lot of trouble in terms of putting a lot of its locals in trusteeship. So in terms of union democracy, it's not like SEIU has a completely clean record on union democracy.
Sure.
As we've said, the United Food and Commercial Workers, they're really good people. We supported their strike 120%, but that was not one of the better-run strikes, and I don't think it failed for lack of money. So, and what I said to John Wilhelm, who's a very dear and old friend of mine, is, what are you going to do if Sweeney meets you halfway?
Right.
Because he's not stupid.
Right.
So Sweeney apparently, in your opinion, did meet him halfway.
Absolutely, yeah.
And why didn't they show up? I mean, you're not in charge of changing the government, but why didn't they have a floor fight on the convention itself?
Here's the thing. I mean, I can't speak to what their strategy was, but what happened was they personalized their disagreements with President Sweeney to a very high degree. That's all a little hard to understand. I mean, you know, President Sweeney came out of SEIU.
Of course.
Most of his staff came out of SEIU. You know, they had a lot of input for many years in what the AFL-CIO looks like, and then they turn around and they say, you know, this thing isn't working and we're going to trash it and change it, whatever it is. The most outrageous comment that I've seen in the last few days is the one that was attributed to Anna Berger that I read on a couple of the blogs in which she said, the debate is over. I don't know if you saw that.
She'll be on next.
The debate is over. And the notion that the debate about the future of the labor movement is now over, as opposed to just beginning.
That's right.
That they feel so confident that they have answers which are going to address the terrible crisis into which the labor movement has fallen, I find astonishing, because I think the issues that you're raising are key issues that have not been debated. I mean, Bill Fletcher raised an issue on one of the blogs in the last couple of days about looking at the experience of what happened in Australia, where the unions there reorganized along sectoral lines and were smashed anyway. And this was one of the big arguments, that if you reorganize the labor movement sectorally, you know, winnowed it down to fewer unions, then we would be that much stronger. I think the question that you have to look at is, if you look at why the labor movement is in crisis, and you take a balance sheet and you say, is it mostly our will and our ineptitude and our lack of resources, or is it mostly what's happened in the economic system and the most vicious attacks that we've seen from a national administration? You would have to say that it's the external factors which are more important. They are essentially asserting that if we work hard enough and we work smart enough, we will be able to overcome these external factors and grow dramatically. And I, you know what? I don't think anybody really has the answer to that. I don't think anybody has the magic solution. And so to me, you know, this needed to be the beginning of a debate, because there's no question that we need to learn to do things better. We need to be more effective. We need new political strategies. We need new ways of reaching young people, immigrants, and so on. But I don't think anybody's got the answers. I don't think it's settled, and I think this is really unfortunate. And I do think it's potentially very, very weakening to the labor movement.
We're on with KPFK 90.7 FM. Bob Masters from Communication Workers of America. What's this going to look like in Boston and New York and L.A. and Chicago? I asked Martin Ludlow this, and, you know, he wasn't either clear or, you know, at liberty to say, but are there going to be two separate county feds? I mean, obviously, is the split going to go all the way down to what's it going to look like in Boston?
In New York, where I am.
New York, fine.
You know, I honestly don't know. I think that, you know, we're going to get involved in a governor's race, potentially in a mayor's race. You know, we're pretty divided about what's going on here in the mayor's race to begin with, which speaks to the political divisions, which, you know, in a sense transcend these organizational questions. But you know,
could you explain that split?
I mean, you know, the building trades are completely with our Mayor Bloomberg here, because he wanted to build this Westside Olympic Stadium, and so they're with him. One of the big public employees unions has endorsed the mayor, and then, you know, a lot of the rest of us are, you know, haven't quite made up our minds. Some are with some of the Democratic challengers. I mean, we're not faced with a lot of terrific choices here at the moment. But, you know, so there are political splits, you know, which are quite significant, which, you know, are hard to work out. But, you know, presumably we're going to be united in a big gubernatorial election next year when Eliot Spitzer is running for governor. We're going to have two separate operations. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you know, we have enough problems getting unity and working together as it is. Now we're going to, you know, lay this additional division on top of it. I mean, I'll tell you an interesting story if I have a minute here.
Sure.
I was in. We have a a cross-endorsement independent party. It's hard to explain to your listeners in California because they're not familiar with this whole...
The Working Families Party,
of which I am the co-chair here in New York. And I was out in Missouri on Friday. Now, there's a group of unions coming together to try to change the ballot laws in Missouri to allow cross-endorsement so they can build the Working Families Party out there over the next several years. And, you know, I'm sitting in a room with the president of the state Fed, with SEIU, with CWA, with the building trades, with Teamsters, the Missouri NEA, and everybody's together. And, you know, we got co-chairs from all these different organizations of the ballot initiative going forward, and it really struck me. Here we were on the eve of this dissolution of the Federation over these organizational questions and allocation of resources, and there's work to be done, real work that we need to come together, and we can come together at the grassroots where the big boys don't matter, right, where these big personality fights or whatever they are don't really have an impact on the day-to-day work. And we can work together. And to see that jeopardized, to see people potentially divided, is just wrong, in my opinion.
Speaking of working together, so what will the implications mean in terms of particular sectors when you have AFL-CIO and then the Change to Win? Will we look at, instead of focusing on the main targets, the corporations, will the main blow be each other versus who we really need to be addressing?
I think that's a real danger. I think it's a real danger. I think you can see a lot of competition already developing in certain sectors, particularly in the public sector and among groups like home health care workers and home daycare workers, where, you know, people are just going to be fighting over the same turf and without a mechanism now for resolving these disputes. You know, as weak as people have said the AFL-CIO is, we do have this Article 20 and Article 21, which, give us a way of resolving these disputes over rating and so on. So, Anna's going to get on in the next interview and declare this is a new day for workers and they've got all the new tactics and they're going to shake things up. You know, I think only time will tell, but I think there's going to be a huge price to be paid in the interim. And I think there is going to be a lot of money wasted competing for the same groups of workers instead of fighting the boss. And I think that, you know, the question of how you distribute dues back to the local, the idea that you know, a few million dollars back to the Teamsters or a few million dollars back to the UFCW is going to make a dramatic change in their organizing program when these are unions, you know, like my own, which, you know, the CWA has a $100 million budget. There's plenty of money that we've got to figure out how to allocate so that we have more resources for organizing. The change has to happen in the affiliates from the bottom up, in the local unions, in the consciousness of the workers who I think, you know, have really been left out of this debate.
Well, Eric was talking earlier about, and you had mentioned some of the real issues around, you know, The Nation magazine had Let's Hear About the Future of Labor from 7 White Men. So there's a real issue of grassroots participation amongst people of color, amongst women, amongst immigrants. What are we going to do about the war? So what are you guys doing in terms of the CWA to inject that kind of conversation, both first in your own union and then in the larger federation as a whole? Because these are conversations that then are not being talked about because the split is taking precedence.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, on those questions, I mean, for example, on something like the Working Families Party, you know, we've been very active in proposing, you know, alternative approaches to politics, figuring out ways of disciplining Democrats from a progressive direction, raising these kinds of issues. I mean, we passed an anti-war resolution, which I know our delegates are carrying into the international, you know, to the national AFL-CIO convention. But I will be candid. I will admit, you know, that we have our own change process to go through. You know, we have to look inside and communicate to our own local leaders that this really is a labor movement in crisis and that we can no longer be complacent. And that's where I think the process of change has to start. To the extent that this whole debate has stimulated some affiliates to begin to look inward, that's a positive thing. But now to have to see that the AFL-CIO may well be crippled in a lot of the things that it has done well. I mean, the political program in the AFL-CIO, you know, has been a tremendous positive change over the last 10 years. And that's really in jeopardy now. I mean, it's true that we didn't win the 2004 election, but it was not a failing, I don't believe, of the AFL-CIO. It was a failing of the Democratic Party and the failure of someone like John Kerry to take clear positions that, you know, appealed to
anybody,
a lot of voters.
Well, let's end with Bob was saying this, that one of the things that I think is interesting in history is that you can argue something in a static way, and I don't mean that you are doing so. We are trying to understand at a given moment in time our initial perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
But now, it's happened. So I think now the question is going to be tremendous pressure on Change to Win to see can they change to win, right? I mean, obviously, these are very smart people, and they think that this split is going to ultimately create more people in the union movement. You've indicated certainly that it may push the AFL-CIO in a more progressive direction, if only in a competitive marketplace situation.
Right.
So I think we have to understand that we've tried to raise a lot of concerns about it, and we're going to raise it with Anna also. But the other side of it is, as organizers used to say, practice will tell. Let's go out on the block and see who's going to organize more workers, right?
Right.
So that's the other side of it, which
right.
is can coalitions be built at the local level? Can people like yourself create the kind of statesmanship to say, all right, there's a split at the national level, but that's not going to prevent us trying to build a coalition in New York to defeat Pataki and defeat Bloomberg and the crazy West Side New York Jam, a Jets fan, but that was bizarre.
Right.
So, I think we want to keep you back on the show and in 6 months and a year, we'll take a look and see, was this a good move or are the deteriorations deteriorating?
I think so. And I think one of the things that really struck me, and the last thing I'll say here is that, if we look back in history, I think that the whole analogy has been drawn to the rise of the CIO, and what's missing from that historical analysis as put forward by the Change to Win folks is there was a tremendous upsurge from below that drove that split. And what we don't have here is ballast from below. And I'm just concerned here that without that energy from below, without that real upsurge in workplaces of militant action by workers in the workplace, I don't see how this kind of bureaucratic restructuring sustains itself or leads to the kinds of dramatic changes that they're talking about. And that's what time will tell. We don't know.
Well, thanks so much, Bob. You're listening to the Voices from the Front Lines. I'm Tammy Bang-Liu, co-host Eric Mann, and you've been listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. This is part of the Pacifica's national coverage of the AFL-CIO convention. We've been speaking with Bob Masters from the Communication Workers of America, and we'll be right back with Anna Berger, chair of the Change to Win Coalition.